Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise, I talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people that cross my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about sharing our business experiences and harnessing our collective wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, brave, and they're honest. There are many laughs, and surprisingly, there's frequent talk of wine. We're sure you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So settle in. Let's get the conversation started. Welcome to the podcast, Kim Shepherd. Kim's a psychologist and the founding director of Cool Kid Psychology. Kim, have I ever said how much I love your business name?
No, actually, you haven't. I quite like it, so it's nice to hear that others do. Thank you.
Why did you pick it?
Because a lot of the parents that come to see me have, you know, their kids are struggling, usually with the really big emotions. So I liked the idea of, you know, it's a space where families can come and hang their stuff and we can look at it and you know, throw it around and talk about things a little bit, but also for the kids as well, just a safe space where if they lose their stuff, which sometimes they do, that it's okay and I can hold it and we can be in that space together. And the idea is, of course, that over time, those things become more manageable for them.
And they become cooler.
They become cooler.
Cooler.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny because some of the kids, the parents refer to me as we're going to see Cool Kim. So, that's not a bad name, hey.
No, that could be one that you might need to snaffle up the URL for.
Yeah, maybe.
So, take me way back, or just take me the right amount back. When did your private practice career kind of kick off?
Well, it's funny because I guess there's two start dates. One was when I was at university, really, and was looking for some part-time employment and managed to be successful in getting a position to work with a family who had a two-year-old girl with autism spectrum disorder. So from that moment, that was in my undergrad years, I started working privately with that family and also a number of other families. And that continued for the next sort of 15 years, really. And then in terms of my private practice work as a psychologist, you know, that was something that was sort of another leap from the private work that I was doing with families, kids on the spectrum and additional needs. But, you know, obviously once I finished my master's and was a registered psychologist, it just seemed a natural progression to make because I'd already made, I guess it sounds a little bit silly, but a bit of a name for myself in the autism area. So to continue work in that space as a psychologist was fabulous.
Did you have any time in government or sort of paid jobs? And
yes, I felt that that was, I felt that that was something that I needed to do because, you know, there are certain luxuries that we have in the private space. And I guess the same could be said for public. So I spent about just over a year in a public early intervention service, and it was fabulous. I loved it. The thing that I loved about it was the families were amazing, and to work in a team that had specialist teachers, occupational therapists, and speech therapists and psychologists, and we're all under the one roof and all sharing the same office, it was just fabulous. Was just, you know, to be able to poke my head around the corner and say, you know, I'm trying to write a plan for, you know, one of the families, and you know, language and communication is often, you know, big things to plan for, and to have access to amazing speech pathologists and occupational therapists to put together a plan for the family was awesome. Like I look back on that time and just think I was really lucky, and I'm still good friends and in contact with a lot of those, you know, speeches and OTs as well, which is awesome.
Yeah, my early work experience was a bit similar. I didn't realize how unusual and how amazing my first couple of jobs were until years later when I started to realize that those jobs didn't really exist anymore, or there wasn't always that sort of diversity across the team as well. So, you know, really mature, experienced, generous practitioners who are really happy to coach you along with patience in their hearts as you're kind kind of madly struggling at the ropes. And yeah, it's a little harder to find some of those jobs now because so much has been privatized, I guess.
I think so. And the move to, you know, the key worker model in that early intervention space as well. Yeah. And look, I'm no longer involved in the government agencies anyway. So, you know, I've lost touch with a little bit of, you know, the ins and outs of how they work. But I think one of the other things that I took from it was, I guess, an awareness of exactly what a speech pathologist does, because a lot, and the same for OT. And I think that's really helped me in the private practice work that I do now, because I know when to refer on. And I know that, you know, there are some things that speechies can do way better than psychologists can, and the same for OT. And I know that those three particular professions can all work together beautifully as well, you know, for the benefit of the child and the family. So, you know, it gave me a bit of that experience as well.
Yeah, quite the power trio, those three, with a couple of add-ons I'd probably add as well. Did your private practice start from home, or did you start from rooms, or were you mobile? What were those early days like?
Oh, it was a bit of everything. Initially, I just worked for I just subcontracted out of rooms, and I've kind of been all over the place. So I've spent a bit of time down in the Mornington.
I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, I've spent a bit of time down on the Mornington Peninsula because I know that area quite well as well. So initially I started out there just working from some rooms down that way, and then moved up towards, you know, back up towards Bayside. So around Malvern and McKinnon, Carnegie and that sort of space, and have now settled in Hyatt, which was nice.
So by way of a geography lesson, we're talking about Melbourne, and it's inner and outer
parts. Yeah.
So that's all good. And where are you now?
So in Hyatt at the moment, and the practice operates at the back of my property, which was a big decision to make as a psychologist. And I actually sat on that for that decision for, I think, a good 6 months. You know, is it the right thing to do? You know, people know where I live. Is that going to be a problem? And after, you know, tossing all of that stuff around, I decided to do it, to give it a go, and have not looked back. It's been the best thing.
What was the final tipping point? What really got you over the line with that decision? It's huge.
Yeah, boundaries. And I knew that I was good with those anyway, so, which is a tricky thing for psychologists, and particularly when, you know, as I said, that people are coming, not coming into my home, but they know where my home is. I also know of a couple of other psychologists who have done the same thing. And so that gave me a bit of confidence as well. And I think talking to other psychologists and just, you know, talking about the pros and cons, and eventually I just made the decision to do it. And I think one of the things that was definitely a big pro for me, obviously the commute to work is not that, you know, it's a pretty good commute to work. But the feedback too that I've got from families is that they love the space. It's not a doctor's office.
Yeah.
It's not a, you know, if their kids are noisy, that's okay, because there's a backyard and a trampoline and a basketball hoop, and there's just space for the family just to be, you know, who they are without fear of being judged by others sitting in, you know, doctor's surgeries and that sort of stuff. So it's just a really nice space. And everyone that comes in just says the same thing. This is lovely. So it seems to be that it's a relaxing space and families feel really comfortable here, which is what I wanted. Yeah. So, and any of the other concerns that I had, I think back about that now, and I think, gosh, they were reasonable concerns to have, but it has not been a problem. And I think that's just come out of having really tight boundaries around when the clinic is open and being really very clear about, you know, where the clinic is positioned and ways of accessing it and security, you know, around the property and separate entrances and all those sorts of things. So I felt like I'd really taken care of all of that sort of stuff so that I could relax and just enjoy the space that the families have. Yeah, and a really nice work environment.
Ah, but the big question is, how are the cats coping?
the cats, they love it. You know, the kids, they come and they love to to, you know, it's a little search around the backyard. Where are the cats today? And we talk about the cats' names, and we talk about, you know, which one likes the pats and which ones don't. So, you know, they're pretty
still
happy.
Hiding a year
yeah.
later.
Yeah, yeah, probably. No, they're pretty happy.
I love the idea of it normalizing the work that you do as well, and just putting it literally almost into a backyard family context right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Wonder if that kind of frees up some of the conversation and fast-tracks some things almost, rather than this medical vibe of pulling up and car parks and weight rooms and...
I think so.
Do you think it does? I think so.
I just feel like, and I think that's what I was trying to say before, when clients, you know, come for the first time, and I, you know, and it's really clear, as I said, you know, where they need to go and where the entrance is and all that sort of stuff, but they just, it's like they sit in the, on the couch and they just kind of melt into the seats and look out the window and just, and the backyard's gorgeous. Like it's, you know, grass and trees and very private. And they just say to me, this is just lovely. And of course, because I'm used to it. And so it's a reminder that, yeah, it is really lovely. And they just feel comfortable. I think it just adds to, and they know that, you know, it's a secure place, that their conversations aren't going to be overheard or compromised.
Yeah, true.
And often one of the things that I really like to do, it's not always possible, is have both mum and dad present, particularly for the first couple of appointments, and having the extra space allows a bit of a tag team. So often, you know, dad might take the child out and have a kick of the footy, or, you know, shoot a few hits of basketball, and then mum can have some space to talk about something that's troubling her without, you know, little ears overhearing. So yeah, it works well.
That's great. I hadn't thought of that piece at all, but your room is gorgeous. I've sat in it and it's IKEA inspired, and yeah, big move, but big results from that.
Yeah,
well done. Well done.
Thank you.
So fair to say business is booming and growing and the phone is ringing. You've been working with a virtual assistant for a little while. Is that still on the go?
Still is on the go. Yeah, she's been with me for over a year now, I think. Yeah, well, I think, yeah, definitely over a year. Yep.
And what sort of things does she do?
Oh, my gosh, she does. Sometimes I've been in a session and we were doing some food play for something, and I'm like, oh, drats, I need, you know, a litre of milk. And I can't leave. I mean, she's local to me as well.
Oh, you did.
So
did you?
She's even snuck out.
You did.
And you know, oh no, that's fine, I can get it. So, you know, she's, and I know that's probably a little bit naughty of me, but she's been really helpful in those moments as well. But she is like my other, you know, hand. She is fabulous with the families. I always get positive
feedback. So she answers your phone?
Yeah, answers the phone. She manages my bookings to the point now where I don't put anything in my calendar, because I've tried that recently and suddenly it's, you know, she's had another client going in there. And so I've actually learned, I've just stepped away completely from my diary, and it's totally hers. And she's got it all organized. If a client needs to reschedule, then they call her. She's on the phones from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And the thing that I like about just having one person was that families know her. So they know her, she knows, and it's kind of like an extension of, you know, the clinic setup that I've got at the back of my property. We all know each other, and families feel really comfortable in calling up, and they'll just say to me, I'll chat to Lauren and I'll sort that out. So, you know, it's working beautifully. Yeah.
Wow. What else does she do? Phone, calendar, she'd send out documents and make sure documents are returned. Does she do invoicing?
She does, yeah. She does the invoicing, and she does, because we're also registered with DSS, so she does faxia processing as well. She does all of it.
My gosh.
I know. She's amazing.
Very unicorn.
Yes, she's amazing. And she loves it. I mean, I would have been happy to sort of outsource, you know, particularly the invoicing side of things. But she said, no, I can do it. We've got time within the budget. Still fits with what we're, you know, working on. And it works. I've actually found that works nice for families as well, because they know they can call up any time during the day and they'll get Lauren, and they'll know that she'll be able to address any invoice concerns or Medicare rebates that haven't gone through, and it happens in real time, in the moment, rather than emails and messages and all that sort of stuff. So, and that's one of the things that I wanted to provide the families as well, just efficient service as well as, you know, good therapy, but just efficient service. So if you've got an inquiry, it gets addressed, you know, either if Lauren's not on a call immediately, or she'll get back to them, you know, within the day.
The customer service is increasingly important. And we were both in the room when Kate Schreck spoke last weekend, and it came as such a good reminder to me that it is just as important as the clinical skills, equally important. And yet sometimes it sort of takes a bit of a slip, and customers, our clients are very, very smart, and they know what they need, and they often need it quite quickly. And we can be real bottlenecks in sorting those sorts of things out. And I know I was always the worst person in the building to ever sort any of that stuff out, and that it really needed my front of house team. So to them, forever grateful.
Yeah. Look, and I'm terrible at all of that stuff as well. Like, it's not my area of expertise.
Yeah.
And so happy to outsource to people who love that stuff and are really good at it. One of the things too that I have noticed about that is that families, having someone, whether it be one or two people, just to manage that part of, you know, just the general inquiries, invoicing and that sort of stuff, is it just takes away, you know, unnecessary additional stress that the family shouldn't have to worry about, terms of appointments and all that kind of stuff. Because, so if we can alleviate some of that stress, then all good.
All good.
Yeah.
Whilst business is humming along now, where have the big struggles been in the years to this point?
Oh, gosh. Good question. I think if I was to pick two, and we're kind of in one at the moment, and I love the term that you use to refer to it, is growing pains. You know, those good old growing pains. But prior to that, it's really just, and I think I've referred to it before as well, having had some rooms in Frankston and in McKinnon, and then also at South Yarra, so, you know, all around Melbourne, probably not the best business decision to make, because I wasn't spread across all of those three locations at the one time. I moved the practice, and I think what that did is it disrupted the relationship building. You know, with your local GPs and pediatrician, all that sort of stuff. And I think that was certainly to the detriment of the practice. And some of those moves were out of my control. So they were just things that had to happen. So it wasn't sort of an active choice. There were things that just needed to happen. So I had to cop some of that. And that was too part of the reason for sort of bringing it back to home, if you like, you know, the whole home office thing, because I know this area. I've been linked in with these families and service providers and allied health, you know, professionals and all that sort of stuff for 20 years. So it gave me an opportunity to just reconnect with that network again and then just get to work.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that was one struggle, the moving and the geography. Is there another one in there?
The other one, well, I guess it's really, I don't know if it's a struggle at the moment. It's kind of like a challenge, just managing the expanded growth, you know, and I really struggle with that, and not having, you know, team members or, you know, my own time to manage the referrals that are coming in. And look, I expect that's just an ongoing thing that, you know, more experienced businesses, you know, it's like a continual struggle, I guess. I've just got to work out how to better manage that. And I guess that's part of the growing pain stuff.
And trying a few different ways and mapping what works and releasing what doesn't. What's your week looking like? Is it 90% clinical, 50% management? Are you burning the candle at both ends, or is it kind of slotting together okay?
It was slotting together okay until the last 3 months, and then it just, you know, things changed. And by that, I just mean the number of referrals that were coming my way significantly increased. And so that was a bit of a struggle. But in terms of the split, you know, I do 3 days clinical work, and then the rest is, you know, business stuff, whether that be meetings or reports or anything else that I, you know, need to do.
I'd like podcasts.
Yeah. And I like to leave some space for ad hoc things. So if I need to do a school visit, which I don't generally do so much of, but if I need to do one for just, you know, for an assessment or something, that I've got the capacity within those non-clinical days to do that. And I guess the business side of things is taking up more time now because I've just had to, because things have shifted so much in terms of the, you know, the referrals and that sort of stuff, and bringing on board, you know, a psychologist and looking for, you know, another team member in the not too distant future. Like, it just, it means that my time is needed for those things as well. And that's not something that I, you know, want to outsource. That's my thing. Yeah. To welcome the team members and to do all that sort of stuff so they feel comfortable and, yeah, what's going on and how to do it and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, I've got several questions all bubbling to my into my mind at once.
Good.
What have you done to get the phone ringing? So these last couple of months, loads more referrals. What were you doing in the months beforehand to make that happen?
I have no idea. Oh, wouldn't that be really interesting to know?
What do you reckon? What would be your best
thing? We track where the referrals come from, and I have noticed that there are more referrals coming from, you know, a few sources. So, but the reason for that, some I know about. So I know that, and these are more colleagues who are referring cases to me either because they don't have the capacity to, or they've moved into a different line of work. And, you know, only feel comfortable in you know, sending families, you know, to someone that they know. So I think that's been one of the things. The other thing is, I think, and I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but, you know, that relationship building stuff.
Yep,
just
I know that.
The networking and all of that stuff. I think it was just, it's not something that, you know, you do on a Friday and then Monday, you know, you've got all these referrals coming in. I just think it was time. I spent and have spent and continue to spend time in just engaging with other practitioners, you know, making the phone calls, making an effort to talk to the GP rather than just shoot off a Medicare letter, to follow up, to stay engaged with the schools. I've done free talks at schools. I link in with other school psychologists. So it's all that sort of stuff. And I think that it's just that I'm just seeing the consequences of that, perhaps.
Sometimes when we do a talk at a school, nothing happens and we think, oh, well, that didn't work. But in fact, it might take months, might take a term or two, and you might even have to do it a couple of times. And it's often this layering up effect of, oh, my God, I sound as though I'm 90.
I hope you're okay.
I'm trying to discreetly drink water.
Yeah, good. Okay.
At the same time.
Okay.
And it's the layering up effect. It's a few things. It's GP and parents hearing and teachers hearing and all the rest of it that contributes to it. But I remember you saying you were sort of being more social and getting out a little bit more and talking to more people at the start of the year, and you perhaps were more powerful than you thought at the time.
And it's funny, I think about that, and I think I'm just talking about the things like that I love and that I'm really passionate about. And I suspect, because I'm the same, when I'm interacting with someone and I can see that they're passionate and driven and they've got a focus and they've got skills that they're bringing to the table and they're doing a good job and they love what they're doing, you know, that stuff's really contagious, I guess. And I think, and it's through some of the, you know, the events that you've put on as well, Kathy, whether that be formal or informal, just an opportunity to, you know, build a bit of a loosely or tightly connected tribe. And I really like that space. Yeah. And I guess that's on the allied health, you know, practitioner side, but also just being out about, you know, out and about and in the community and letting people know. I mean, with the relocation from, you know, one location to another, part of that process was I had to let people know where I was. And so I think, you know, all the other stuff, the social stuff and talking to people just came out of that as well. And I just found myself in this space of, you know, talking to people and making times to catch up with people. And I thought, I really like this. This is great. And it's all just
getting out there.
Yeah. Which is not something that I would, you know, typically do, I suppose. And I didn't do that looking for it's funny. I didn't do that looking for business. I did that just because I wanted to connect with other like-minded people. And then I just found, which is sort of what I was, you know, talking about before, about having to take care of the business side of things. You know, I was happy just settling into my home office with my lovely backyard, and families were happy and I was happy and I just loved doing what I was doing, and that was great for a few months, and then it became bigger than that. And I was going to be happy just to keep doing that. That'd be what I do. And then it just, you know, it keeps, things never stay the same.
Imagine if they did, it would be dreadful.
I know. But I'm kind of, dreadful. I think I'd just gotten comfortable. And then, you know, like I said before, I guess all the networking and relationship building and all that sort of stuff had come into a, was working, I guess, for.
Yeah. I meet a lot of allied health business owners who get a bit lonely as well, particularly when they're solopreneurs. And whilst it might look like a marketing opportunity or a messaging opportunity, and it might look like the chance to talk to people about what you do, it's actually our deep, dark desire to connect and chat and talk about kids and talk about mental health and talk about the way we want the world to work and to change it one conversation at a time. And that is also equally really, really powerful messaging about our beliefs and values and why we do what we do. And getting out there and starting chats on all sorts of levels can lead to all sorts of change.
Mm. And that's the thing too I loved about the PEDS Biz conference on the weekend. It was catching up with friends and listening to great content and coming away inspired and energized and full of ideas and all that sort of stuff. And it was like, that was just a win-win for me, those kind of days.
Well, that's how I left as well, and I organized it. So,
well, good job.
Thank you. I left with a notebook full of things to do and people to talk to and things to think about. And, you know, as a committed lifelong learner, my gosh, imagine if I came home and hadn't kind of picked up any new tricks or any new introductions or what have you. So what gets unusual in this allied health business world is we're often not in a room with other allied health business owners. We're often with psychologists or with OTs, or we're at an autism conference and there's a side serve of business, if you like. But to build a community where you can ask business questions and think business thoughts and all the rest of it seems to be increasingly needed. So, yeah.
I thought it was fabulous. And having gone to another PD, I think the day before I came to the PEDS Biz one, you know, completely different. And it was exactly as you said, I was a psychologist amongst mostly speech pathologists. And, you know, you learn your content and then you've done your PD and then you go home. And, you know, you reflect on that and you implement those things in your practice where needed. But you know, the time in the in that room, and one of the things that I love and hate that you do, Kathy, is the whole, all right, let's get down to action. Write down the things that you're going to do and when you're going to do them by. And, you know, every event that I've been to of yours, I've always written something down and I've always done it. So, you know, and that's massive.
Thank you later. Well, you may not like it, but it's often effective because we've all got to-do lists, but to know what to kind of tackle next is important.
Yeah.
So back to the management piece, how have you learned to manage your business?
Oh, wow. Talk about just, you know, sometimes fly by the seat of my pants. I think the best thing that I did was to outsource the things that I'm not good at.
Ooh.
To maximize.
What are those things?
Accounts, bookkeeping, admin, that stuff.
Yeah.
Just because I was doing all of it, which was fine. I like, you know, you've got control over everything, you know where everything is, you know, all the emails and all the communication and all that sort of stuff, and you're all over it. But then it got to the point where that just was not feasible anymore. And you know, the late nights and the long days just doing all of this stuff, which someone else who's way better at doing that stuff, like an accountant or a bookkeeper, you know, could come in and do and free up a whole lot of my time so that I could go back to doing the things that I was good at, which is the clinical stuff and you know, all the other things. So I think I learned to do that. I learned to look at what's on my plate, what can I do and what do I want to do, and with the other things, who can help me with that. Mm-hmm. And just making a decision, because it's, you know, I don't want to sit on this decision because it's taking up my time. Who else can I talk to help me with this? Who else can do it that's good at it? And then just get rid of it. That sounds really harsh, but
no,
I just, you know, I learned to just be super organized and just be a good decision maker and a good problem solver. And if I couldn't fix it or if I didn't want to,
find someone who can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you read books and read online and learnt business words?
Yeah, my accountant helps me out with some of that stuff. I'm sure some of the conversations I have with him, he leaves, you know, and just goes, she's got no idea.
Oh, how she's a psychologist.
I just think, oh, whatever, you know, that's what he does.
He's patient.
So, you know, and I do want to have, you know, a general understanding of how those things work.
It's important.
But I don't need to do the nitty gritty and I don't, you know, I'll just mess it up. So I like the things that I'm interested in terms of the business side of things. I've had a look at a bit of, you know, digital marketing, that sort of stuff. A lot of online, just following people that I admire or that motivate and inspire me and see how other people are doing things. I actually picked up at a conference, like a PD for the Australian Psych Society. It was around court reports and subpoenas and that sort of stuff. And the guy who was presenting, who's fabulous, he had a book that is for Australian psychologists, and it's called Fit to Practice. And that's probably been the book that I have used the most, I'd say, in terms of the private practice business side of stuff. He talks a lot about, you know, there's lots of case studies in there about, you know, difficult moments. And, yeah, it's just a really good resource I've found.
I haven't heard of it. Might take a bit of a look.
Yeah, I'm not sure how old it is, but I liked that it was Australian, that it was targeted to psychologists because we have different privacy laws and, you know, ethics and all that sort of stuff. So it was really fabulous. And it's one of those books that you can kind of just go to the section that you want.
Oh, nice. You don't have to
get the information. Yeah.
Good.
So nice, efficient book to read.
Good. What have you got going on the digital marketing space and Facebook? What's that looking like?
Oh, I've got a Facebook page.
I haven't seen too much in recent times, which is, it annoys me about Facebook. I seem to have to get in and click and like everything to get everybody's news.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, there's other people that are much smarter than I am about Facebook's algorithms and how it works and how to get in people's feeds and all that sort of stuff. And I think that for me, that's one of those things of I need to do some more work in that space, but then it's, you know, finding the time to do that or outsourcing it, you know, if that's something that's of value. I think, like you were saying before, it's one of those layers. It's just that there's an online presence and I post, so I don't, you know, no one else does that for me. I find things that I think, you know, my followers, it sounds funny, the page's followers, I don't have followers, you know, people that follow the business, things that they'd be interested in. And I know, you know, what I know who those people are and I know the things that they're interested in. And I just continue to keep people engaged. One of the things that I'd like to do in that space is to start to share some of my own thoughts. And work.
I thought you might have been going to say video.
Yes, actually, that's one of the promises that I made at the conference that I was going to start doing some videos. So that's on the list, Kathy.
Oh, good. The content you share is great, which is why I notice when I don't get it.
Right.
I find really good stuff from all over the place and it's really readable and interesting and practical and non-judgmental and non-sensationalist at all. It's content I really enjoy reading.
Oh, that's good. Look, and I like it too. And there are things that, and that, I guess that's the beauty about the online world. You can get information from anywhere and you know, when you find a source that sits with, you know, the values, you know, my own values and the values of the business and that's, you know, that covers a lot of the concerns that families come and, you know, come to the practice with, then, you know, there's that information's there, easily accessible and so easy to share and can generate some really interesting discussions online as well.
Yes. Yeah. Certainly there's been some statements by a politician that we shall not name in the last 48 hours that has generated more angst and I don't even have adjectives for what those comments have generated, but that has certainly got comment going on every single page I look at or follow or have contact with. The outcry has been quite extraordinary and I've decided to post some of that on my personal page and some of the positive, more forward-focused content on my business page just so that I had a social record on both sites
about
this momentous kind of event for me, which Yeah. Whew.
I know. And look, I can't imagine for lack of a better word, the pain that families would have felt with someone saying that. But I love I've seen Nicole Rogerson she's created this movement of, you know, post your child, very much focus on this is who we are and we're amazing and, you know, we are here and we're included and we're part of this. So, you know, like you said, some really nice stuff has come out of that. And it's got people talking.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that wasn't, you know, the intention of the person who made the comments, but, you know, it's got people talking. And I've found it really, I guess, inspiring to read some of the parents' comments and to see their passion and how strongly they have been advocating for their child and how they will continue to do so regardless of, you know, stuff like that. Mm. So good on them.
The post about our politician stating that children with autism should be segregated from mainstream schools, just to give a bit of context, has in fact gone global. I've seen it on some of the other global international sites that I follow through Twitter and through Facebook. And I guess when something so heartfelt hits, you really do scrabble for the silver lining. And as we were chatting about yesterday, is if it gets people talking and if it builds some awareness for teachers and schools and supports for educators, then oh my gosh, I'll take the silver lining. But cloud's pretty big still.
Nasty. Just not nice stuff.
No.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the services that you offer and what they're going to look like in the next year or two. So current status and a little bit of crystal ball future stuff.
Yeah, awesome. At the moment, we do interesting split of services. We do ASD, so autism spectrum disorder, and that's been my space. I've been working in that space for over 20 years now. So, and I did worry about becoming known as the, you know, go to the autism lady, go and see her. And I even had a family the other day say, oh no, Kim only does autism, but call her and, you know, see, she'll help you out. So I'm not quite sure what to do with that and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But we do ASD, but we also do so much more. So anxiety, ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder, parenting, teenagers and parents that just get stuck. They're typically, I'm saying in inverted commas, you know, they're typically developing kids that just get a little bit lost or a bit too sad, some grief counselling. So it's a real mixture of things and I love that. I really enjoy it. It's a good split of work and do some school support as well and also where we can accommodate it, home visits as well. So one of the other services that we provide for kids with autism is the ABA programming, whether that be early intervention or just some extra support at home for parents around, you know, the tricky routines or homework or tutoring. So it's a bit of a mixture of things, but it's nice. I like it.
Good. And what's the outcome of the growing pains? What's it going to look like in a year's time or 5 years or 10 years or?
Yeah, in a year's time, the team will be bigger. For sure. One of the things that's on the table, if you like, is to organise a space. And I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like or where that is. That's really going to be focused on diagnostic stuff for ASD and intervention and therapy supports. So that's really the next big thing that I'm planning for in the not too distant future. And then beyond that, I know that I'm not going to, or the entire team's not going to be able to practice out of the space that I've got on my property. So we will need to find another space. So it'll be part of that as well.
And who's in your current team?
Well, it's myself, another psychologist, Rachel Lark, and she is brilliant. Of course, but it's funny because when she applied for the position, she reminded me that I trained her in 2007.
Ooh.
And I thought, I feel really old, but I just thought, oh, wow, that's awesome that we've, you know, reconnected mm-hmm. because I know now that we're on the same page, you know, we've she stayed working in the same space as well. So she's done 10 or 12 years of work with, you know, ABA and autism spectrum disorder. She's got loads of experience in the school space and she's, you know, just love and a mum too. So, you know, it was really great that we crossed paths again and we'll be working together. So I'm really excited about that.
Good, good. Yeah. And you've recently been doing some recruiting, I happen to know.
Yes.
What have you learned in this recent round of recruiting? What's been
okay? I'm learning about the interview process, and that's not something that's new to me because I've helped families do that. And you know, obviously, I've been interviewed myself, so I'm you know comfortable and aware of the space. But I think the things that I'm learning is just to how to better manage those interviews to get the best out of the time that we've got together, so I can get as best I can a really good idea of, you know, the applicant, mm. but also to share enough about the practice so that they know what we're about and what we do and whether or not they think it'll be a good fit for them too. Yeah.
That's a great point because sometimes I hear a little bit of angst about talking too much about the business because, well, that's our intellectual property. And I think that ends up making it a little bit hard for the applicant to really understand what the vibe of the place is. That mm. it sort of ends up being a bit shrouded by mystery, and if you're the lucky applicant, you'll have access to all of this good stuff later.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I'm terrible like that. I'm a really upfront person. And so, you know, maybe I should be more like that, Kathy. I'm great with boundaries. No, I'm good with that. But I guess I just love what I do. And so when I've got an opportunity to talk to someone who also loves what they do and we both love the same stuff, you know, you just never know where the conversation's going to go sometimes. But I just, you know, I'm not a hide things kind of person, and I'm, you know, honest and upfront, and, you know, if it's not a good fit, then it's not a good fit, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think perhaps a bit like yourself, I have some mutant gene that is the sticky beak gene. And I really want to know about what people think about things and what their experiences have been and what they've learnt. And I guess I share some of that stuff about my voyage as well. So
it
can be quite easy for me to derail an interview quite quickly after haul it back. And
I think that's comfortable. I think that's comfortable, and you know, that's who you are, that's who I am, and there's no sense in pretending to be, you know, someone that I'm not or do something that I'm not, because that's just, there's no time for that.
Absolutely. What are you loving about your business at the moment?
Oh my gosh, I'm actually really enjoying the business side of things, which is a surprise because I've, you know, I didn't do a double degree in no. So all of this stuff I'm you know, learning as I go, but I'm happily doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other part of, you know, that I love in terms of what I do is one of the things that, I won't say things, but one of the reasons for referrals that come my way is that I'm comfortable with the hard stuff. And that's probably fair to say of a lot of psychologists because, you know, we deal with emotional difficulties and emotional trauma and pain and all that sort of stuff. But I guess what I mean is not only just that stuff, but physically, behaviorally challenged kids. So the kids that can't regulate themselves and, you know, will come into a clinic space and there's a good chance they might destroy something. Mm-hmm. You know, those kind of kids, I'm okay with that stuff. And I can, you know, I'm getting good at dodging missiles that might come my way. My reaction time's pretty good, but I'm okay with that. It doesn't frighten me. And I think for families that come and see me with issues around that space, it's a relief for them because they've found someone who can sit in that space where, you know, the child's out of control, very angry or aggressive, and I can sit there and I can hold it and be okay with it. Yeah.
Gosh.
So I like that. It's a challenge. You know, it's certainly a challenge. It keeps me on my toes, but I kind of like that, you know. I like the unpredictability of it. What's going to happen next? How are we going to manage this? How are we going to work together so that this is not a problem anymore? Like, I love all that stuff, but just, you know, I feel like my brain just gets bigger with each, you know, just there's so much growth that comes out of that for me as well, because talk about fine-tuning your therapeutic skills in the moment,
yeah.
You know, well, but I love that stuff.
Yeah. Our clients usually teach us everything we need to know.
Yes.
As a rule, we've just got to have our eyes open for it. What do you do to look after yourself?
Good question. I shut off on the weekends. So that's family time, that's friend time. I keep all business calls, you know, emails and all that sort of stuff to within the working hours and working days. And then, you know, come the end of the week, Saturday and Sunday, that's me time, that's family time, that's, you know, getting out of the house time. One of the things that I've found, that I've suddenly found that I quite like, is kicking the footy. Like, ooh, I don't know if you've ever had a kick of the footy, Kathy.
Oh, yeah, I have.
After spending, you know, the day mostly seated and talking about mostly heavy stuff, it's really refreshing to get out in the crisp air and kick the footy around.
Heavy work, says the OT.
I'm actually really surprised with how much I, you know, have enjoyed that. It's really therapeutic giving a ball a really hard kick.
And then
running around trying to, you know, catch it. It's just, it's nice to get outside and move. Yeah. And that's what I love. I love the beach. I love moving.
You run?
Runner. Well, just, yeah, being, that's, you know, a little less given,
talk about the running then. Yep.
Yeah. No, but there's space for it. And when I've got time to do it, then I do. And I do that. And I don't have to think twice about it. I just go, right, let's go. And I'm out and I feel amazing after being out, you know, for a little bit. And I've got some amazing girlfriends who, you know, when our kids are doing their mutual sport together, we'll nick off and we'll go and do a little circuit at the park just around the corner, and then we'll come back and pick the kids up.
Mate,
so that time just energizes me, you know, for the rest of the week. You can just step out of the work space and just connect as a, you know, as a person, and just have a laugh and exercise at the same time. Yeah.
Nice. Would I have seen some arty crafty work happening, some sporadic work happening?
Yes. That's another thing, actually, I guess, in terms of self-care. I have not an artistic bone in my body.
No way.
No way. So I thought, I'm going to try mosaicing.
Oh, is that what it is? Not that I couldn't tell, but I've just got a visual fish in mind.
I'm a very skilled worker, Kathy. And I remember turning up to this art class and you know, I felt like I was in primary school again, because, you know, the art teacher, who's amazing, was saying, you know, what do you know about this? No, nothing, nothing. I know nothing. I actually know nothing. I've got no idea. And I'm actually a little bit scared. And I was a little bit scared. Like, talk about putting yourself in a situation where you've got no skills and just trying to work it out. But that's a really...
Posting it on Facebook.
I know. Yeah, why not? I don't mind being vulnerable. We all are. And I think one of the things that's come out of that is just to have a go. And
does it make you laugh?
Oh, it's, you know, the hard stuff, doing those art classes just... is calm. It's just calm. It's peace and calm. That's all it is. And then there's others, you know, there's others in the class. So we often have a little natter about things and have a joke about, you know, so there's certainly some chuckling. But in terms of the artwork, gosh, it's really, it certainly taught me a lot about art therapy. I can see how therapeutic that space would be, you know, in terms of a, just amazing.
Sitting there quietly in the background for decades, art therapy.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's there's lots of stuff that I've learned in terms of what that the potential that has to, you know, experiences to give to people, and, you know, the therapeutic nature. Just, yeah, amazing. Blown my mind, to be honest. It surprised me on a couple of things, and I thought, oh, wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
There you go. There could be an adjunct to your psych services. Never say never.
thought about it, Kathy. I have thought about it. And in fact, my dad, who is a retired carpenter, is currently working on building a sand tray for me.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm open to lots of different things, and it's been nice to, you know, explore some other areas.
Yeah. It's reminded me, I work intermittently with a school, albeit a private independent school. They have a resident art therapist. The therapist, he's been on staff for years.
Yeah.
He works from little guys from the early learning centre right up to the year 12s.
Okay.
What an investment, hey? Isn't that good?
Oh, I think that's really, you know, that's really good. And it certainly acknowledges that, because it can be really powerful, that stuff, that can often connect with people in a way that nothing else can. And that you don't even plan for and expect, you know, really.
Gosh, I didn't think we would end up talking about art therapy, Kim.
Me either, but fancy that, hey?
All good. Well, thank you so much for your time. From a behind-the-scenes perspective on my end, it turns out that the neighbours' gardeners are here, and I've been moving around from room to room, pretty much towels on my head, trying to find a quiet space. So it's probably good timing that we wrap, because I've just heard the lawnmower going.
Okay.
And I think in the efforts of transparency, Kim, fair to say you're sitting in your car. Rummaging around in your house, making a whole lot of background noise. So we are
pretty much, if not
slightly hilarious, allied business owners this afternoon.
Exactly.
Let's just keep it real.
It's not always an oh, too funny. All right, so I can get out of my car now.
Yeah, you can. Okay. I'm going to leave you with the very last word. How about you shout out about your business and shout out the website? We'll put all of the links in the show notes. But if you've got anything a bit special coming up or what have you. So, yeah, talking stick to you.
Thanks, Kathy. So coolkidspsychology.com.au is our website, and we have a number of groups coming up for the remainder of the year. And I'm also doing a bit of speaking as well, which is good, which I didn't talk to you about, Kathy.
Yeah.
But I'm loving doing that as well. So, you know, watch this space for those sorts of things. And we've also got some tip sheets available on the website as well that are free for download. So I've written articles on emotion coaching and anxiety in kids and behavior management and all that sort of stuff. So that'll be available on the website as well. And we've got a Facebook page too. So, you know, jump on and give us a like and maybe we can chat.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. Thank you so much for your generous afternoon time. And it's Friday afternoon, so not long now till we can kind of close the doors. So thank you very much. And
pleasure.
Yeah, we'll catch up soon. Thanks a lot, Kim.
No worries. Thanks, Kathy.
Bye.
Bye.
A big thank you for investing your time right through the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you really enjoyed the conversation. There's lots more just like it waiting for your listening ears. If you're running a private practice and keen for some more business know-how and confidence, head on over to my website, nakerconsulting.com.au. There you'll find business resources and inspiration. There's blogs, forms, templates. There's information about our conferences, workshops, web events, and more. While you're there, you're warmly invited to book yourself in for a free 30-minute coaching session. Let's find some solutions to your current business challenges. And yes, you are more than welcome to pick my brains. My business has a weird name, but it has a cool story. You can read about that when you're on the website. But let me spell it for you now. nacre.com.au. Thank you for listening to Private Practice Secrets. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.